the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, episode 38 of the flagship series, the weekly now StreamYard stream brought to you by ShakePay, the best way to do the Bitcoin dance in Canada. Hey, Len, I think you and I have been using that app now for me, I got to be closing on 3 years, maybe a little longer. And, you know, they have the shaking sats. If you use our referral code to sign up, CBP, you can open the app every day, shake your phone, have a couple of Satoshis streamed to your wallet. And the more days you do it in a row, the more Satoshis you get. You can't go wrong with that. And of course, they also just released, I don't know if we, should we still say just released or maybe released in the last little while anyway, the ShakePay Visa debit card, where you load up your ShakePay account with filthy fiat and spend it at the grocery store or on diapers or deodorant or whatever it is that floats your boat. Maybe at the stag shop. I don't know. Do whatever you want. And tap that thing and get a couple of stats back there as well. And I think, Len, you're going to have to help me with this because I still don't know. There's a boost program going on now. What is it?
So right now, you get the standard 1%, and it's boosted right now to 2% for the first $5,000 you spend. And for the month of December, if you refer to anybody that doesn't have the ShakePay card, if you refer them to get the card, you could add an extra 2%, 1% per referral. So a total of 4% for the month of December. If you don't use any of the referrals, you will only be stuck at the 2%, which is still not too shabby. You're trading, you know, your dirty fiat and spending it on buying some goods or services. And in return, you're getting a portion of that 2% in Bitcoin. How could you go wrong with that, Joey? That seems like a no-brainer to me. And everybody should be using their ShakePay card. And if they're not,
it's a nice app for debit cards. Like I was at the liquor store a couple of days ago buying beer and almost forgot to pull it out. And so when I pulled it out, the lady asked me if it was debit or credit. And I didn't know what to tell her. And it bounced on me the first time. It said card not accepted. And then so I told her to change it to the other one, whatever one she didn't use. And it worked okay. How many sats have you stacked? Are we doing a weekly recap? And we could just see how far ahead of me you get week over week because you have a family and I just spend it on consumables and beers.
I'd have to calculate how much. But every week we go out and buy groceries. And when we go grocery shopping, Joey, our bill is over $250 for the week. And because of that, I load up the card to the max because you can only use $250 per transaction. And so we divvy up the bill into two. So we ask the cashier to take $250 and I swipe my ShakePay Visa card and I get the maximum sats back on one purchase. So I get the 2% back on a $250 purchase. I like it. I think it's good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
How many do you have sats total? I have a couple of pending transactions, so I don't know what the count will be by this time tomorrow or Wednesday, but 14,141 sats back so far.
You got to help me out. Where do I find that?
It's on the card tab.
Oh, so here it is. I got it. Ooh, this is an interesting number. 38,738.
Oh, man. Are you kidding me, bro? Holy shiza.
Yeah, I'm stacking like it's no tomorrow. So, well, you know what? When you go grocery shopping for a family, it's, you know, you're obliged to spend a little bit more. Inflation is going to do that to us. And as a result, I'm going to get more sats back in return. How could I go wrong?
I love it. I love it. Well, welcome, everybody, to the Green Candle Boys. No, it's not Michelob Ultra that I buy at the store. I bought Muskoka Brewing. I don't know. It's one with the Adirondack chair on it.
I can't help you, man. I don't drink beer.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know either. But anyway, Len, the price of Bitcoin in American dollars, I almost don't even want to say it. Like, we've been absolutely bleeding for the last few hours here. $46,473.
You know, I almost want to do it in Mexican pesos just to really make it look to be like a high number. But in Canadian, it's 59,833. Not even 60K Canadian. What the heck's going on here? Either the Canadian dollar has to do something to make it go above 60,000 or BTC's got a pump to make it go. I don't care. Either way, let's do it, man. Let's freaking do it, Joey.
And buddy, before I can't believe the day we had on the markets. I know we're probably going to talk about it, but I just want to say that for, you know, for people who are listening to this show for the first time, it seems like there's new people every week. Don't panic. Okay. I don't know how much we're going to talk about price today, but don't panic about the price today.
Something happened. I thought it was a green day. I don't know, man. The Bitcoin miners, they took a pounding today. They've been taking a pounding for the past week and change. It's got to turn around sooner or later. You know what? If you have any more fiat lying around, just buy, keep buying. And you know what? It's the best thing to do. Couple of things I just want to touch upon, Joey, before we go on to the show. I just want to thank Nick from the Bitcoin Store. He's the guy that provided me this lovely sweater. So thank you for this this gift from Nick from the Bitcoin Store. If you haven't listened to his podcast, go out and do so. You can also find him on YouTube. We got three reviews that are positive this past week from the Apple podcasting side of things. I got one from Greg Fresh, who writes in his title, "Fresh Air in the Bitcoin Community." I like the pun where Greg Fresh is talking about fresh air. We have Derpy Derpus, who talks about how we are amazing. I think this is the second time Derpy Derpus has talked about us. So Double D, you're doing a really good job. I keep giving us 5 stars. We also got LJA78, who wrote that we are legends in the making. So thank you for that. I also want to touch upon Montreal Dave, who says that our podcast is a missed opportunity. Give us 1 star. Normally, I don't talk about these things. And, you know, you could be my no quitter of the week this week.
Did he give you any details about what exactly the opportunity missed was?
He did. You know, amateurish Bitcoin bro shtick. Let's see what else. Strictly D-list quality guests. too much swearing, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I mean, I guess all those Bitcoin CEOs are just D-quality. What could I
say? People don't like the swearing either, eh? Like, I try not to swear a ton, but I mean, the stories that we talk about, how can you not get passionate? And also, there was someone else on Twitter who left me like, I wanted to listen to this with my kid, but the swearing, I had to turn it off. It's disappointing. Don't get me wrong. I understand that there's times where you have to have a child in the car. I'm sure Len can sympathize with this more than me. I would just say that, like, it can't come as a surprise with the explicit tag on the podcast, can it? Like, I looked at Spotify the other day, it's tagged as explicit.
I know, at
Pocket Cast, it's tagged as explicit. Like, you don't turn on a podcast that has the big E next to it and then get upset about swear words. If you don't want to hear swear words, like, I'll try my best, but I can't stress this enough, okay? We always say do your own research. And so the least I would ask of you is just look to see if there's a fucking E next to the title, okay? That's all I'm asking.
So, yeah, Montreal Dave, I'm pretty sure who you are on Twitter, because you also wrote to us on Twitter. So you kind of outed yourself in terms of who it is. I mean,
what did he say on Twitter?
Didn't you see when he said on Twitter that he had the kid in the car? And you basically,
that was him, maybe. Yeah. That was probably, we got to start a comment from the haters section, like Mark Ripito does on Starting Strength. They just read comments. I got to be honest with you, man. I feel like most of the comments we get are really positive. The feedback's excellent. And when someone doesn't agree with something we say, I don't know what your DMs look like. I know mine. It's very civil. There's a well-reasoned argument. And I got to say, like, I've made, like, I don't want to use the F word, but, like, I feel like I've made friends with a lot of people listening to this show. Like, I think about the Green Candle guys who we do spaces with. You know, Merrick in the chat I've talked to before.
Yeah.
Obviously Jordan. And a handful of others. Like, Liam is another guy I talked to in the chat. GBS. And GBS is another guy.
And it goes on and on.
And, like, even today, I was listening to Spaces.
And him too.
And Ryan and Tim and Nancy Danter and Luke McManus was talking to me today. Like, Gibney and all these guys. Like, we made a lot of friends and got a lot of positive feedback. And the disagreements are always respectful. We're going to keep it that way. But I'm not really interested in changing the color of the show. You know, I think that passion, you know, there's a price to pay sometimes, sure, when you're with a child in the car, but that passion is what, you know, on a Monday morning at 6 a.m. or 6:30 a.m. when I should be, you know, just having a coffee and relaxing, that's what's got me on the shared document making notes for the show at night. And the reason I come to the show at night, even though I'm not feeling that great because I blasted through about 1 million bowls of chili yesterday, I'm still going to sit here for 2 hours and bullshit with you guys and talk to Len and go through the important stories, coalesce around the important things. That's what this community does. And I hope this show is part of that for you, swearing or otherwise. So thank you for the reviews. Len is going to keep reading them, I guess. I do like this segment, this new segment, comments from the haters that we just started today. It's great.
I'm going to memorialize them on the wall behind me and add their name one at a time.
So. That's what you can put behind you. Don't put shelves or ornaments. Put just bad reviews.
And yeah, Greek Candles is saying, yeah, like I could be bought with a shirt. So yeah, there you go. If you buy me a shirt, socks, underwear, whatever, I'm going to wear them. I'm not going to show off it's a socks or underwear, but I'll still wear them. So if you want to send them my way, they will be put on my body and put in rotation. No problem whatsoever, Joey.
Let's do it.
And with that being said, is there anything else you want to go on? Or
I'm good to go, man. I got a lot of notes today. You delivered on the A block, and I'm ready to get into the nitty gritty here.
Yeah. So, okay, let's get right at it. And then the first story I want to talk about is, you know, it's got a couple of unique stories. The first one is El Salvador and the U.S. relationship appears to be deteriorating before our very eyes. And there was a tweet from Brian A. Nichols, and he's a U.S. diplomat. And the tweet says, "We condemn Bukele's false accusations against the President of the United States and other U.S. government officials, including Ambassador Maines and current Chargé d'Affaires Brendan O'Brien." He missed an A in that name, by the way. It would have been so much better if it was if Brendan was something else. Anyways, it says, well, basically, this is really condemning the president of El Salvador. And it was a very public exchange between Bukele and the U.S. diplomat, Gene Maines, over the release of a former El Salvador politician, Neto, oh man, I'm going to butcher his last name, Muy Short, I guess. I don't know.
If only he was a rural province in China, you would have nailed it.
Absolutely perfect. We'll call him Neto from this point forward. And Neto is accused of an involvement with gang members that includes evidence of an exchange of money with the gang members. So Maines, and this is the U.S. ambassador, Maines was inquiring to the release of Neto, but Bukele wasn't willing to go ahead with the request due to the inability to track him once they release him. And I'm not trying to pick sides here because I don't know all the story here. I mean, there's a lot to it and there's a lot of things that really won't be known publicly. But it just seems like what I could tell is there seems to be an ever-increasing divide between El Salvador and the United States. And this kind of seems to be developing ever since El Salvador announced they were going to be adopting Bitcoin as a currency alongside the US dollar within El Salvador borders. So a lot of this is going on. It's all relatively recent. And in fact, just this past week, December 9th, 2021, the United States accused the government of El Salvador of secretly providing financial incentives to transnational criminal gangs to quell local gang violence. And this is from the Treasury Department. And they also issued new sanctions against El Salvador officials. So as you could tell, there seems to be a lot of things happening here between El Salvador and the United States. And from what I could tell, I mean, I could be wrong. I think this really just all stems due to the fact that El Salvador is adopting Bitcoin. It must be pissing off a lot of people in the United States. It kind of gives El Salvador a little bit more independence. And I don't think the United States is all that willing to let El Salvador gain a little bit more independence and have some financial freedom. It's just an ever-evolving situation, Joey, and I want to hear what your thoughts are about it.
Well, Len, let me tell you, I think you're probably onto something there. This is, in my view, okay, and I'm not into the whole geopolitical thing with the gangs and the sort of organized financial aid alleged in these tweets between two countries, but I think there's a couple things going on here, okay? This is major because I think we both probably said this would happen on a long enough time horizon. I didn't expect that it would only take like 5 months for these guys to start going after each other. State Department tweets or State Department staff tweets against Bukele's Twitter account and sharing screenshots from WhatsApp like it's an episode of The Hills and this other sort of like just general generally what would have been unthinkable like a year or 2 years ago or 5 years ago has now become commonplace between these two countries, which is hilarious. So we got that going on. And I think that it tells you something that in the midst of what's probably the worst economic situation the U.S. has had in, I don't know, what, 40 years, I think we say all the time, something like 30 or 40 years. These guys, you know, amid the economic problems, cratering approval ratings for Brandon and his sidekick, the undoing in Afghanistan still looming, they find time to have the State Department staff send pointed tweets at El Salvador, painting them as some kind of threat on the international stage. Len, no one at the White House cared about El Salvador 6 months ago. No one did. The White House never tweeted about them. They were never in the news, nothing. And now suddenly they are everywhere when it comes to the press in the United States. And I shouldn't say everywhere, because obviously there's a lot going on, so they can't be an everyday publication type thing. But if you ask The Economist whether or not they have an opinion on El Salvador now, there's an opinion on El Salvador's public policies and their domestic politics and their foreign politics and their economy and corruption at their judicial branch and things of this nature. It's insane. The U.S., I would just mention here, has a long history, okay, that for the sake of YouTube and not being taken down or given a strike, we won't get into on this channel, of interfering with elections, funding gangs, and what I would just say is general pot stirring all over Latin America and the rest of the world, developing or otherwise. It's documented, admitted, and of course, every time it was for their own good, when their hand got caught in the cookie jar. So they're no stranger to this kind of behavior, if in fact they are alleging that El Salvador is engaging in this kind of thing as well. I think the U.S., though, and this is something I tweeted last week when this story came out, I think it came out on Wednesday or Thursday. One of the things I tweeted is the U.S. finds themselves now in a new dynamic with its own population that it wasn't in 10 years ago or 15 years ago or 20 years ago. And the thing is that this is not just in their population now. It's in citizens all over the world. And it's probably been other places in the world for some time, the general sort of discontent with U.S. foreign policy. There was a time when the U.S. could make a declaration like this or an accusation like this on a public stage and be seen as, you know, legitimate. And now I think that there's, you know, a very weary public in the United States and abroad when it comes to this sort of U.S. exceptionalism as a foreign policy, which is what this is. For the FOPO heads, U.S. exceptionalism is basically this idea that the United States bestows on itself the ability to not have to follow any of the norms and rules, but instead set them as the sort of standard bearer for democratic norms around the world. And this has been the case for a long time, at least in the last 20 years. You know, I remember learning this in university when I was taking poli-sci about how these guys carry themselves, you know, at home and abroad, and things like the Bush Doctrine, for example, were sort of unheard of before 2001, 2002, and 3. Anyway, so there's a number of people, I think, who are not going to accept this exceptionalism as an answer now, as a policy driver. And I think that there's just as many people who 20 years ago would have said, yeah, this is a good idea. They're doing this because it's the important thing to do and it's the right thing to do. Now think that the government is basically lying to them at every opportunity. And I think that there's going to be a shift here in the next 2 years or 3 years. I mean, leading up to the next presidential election, I think is a given, but in the next 2 years or 3 years, regardless of the outcome there, domestically and abroad. And Bitcoin's got a little bit to do with this because there's a lot of smart people in Bitcoin and it's a growing sort of section of the population. But the more important thing I would say is that there's a lot of people under 40 who just don't trust the government anymore. They don't trust them on foreign policy. They don't trust them on inflation. They don't trust them on anything. And these days where the government used to be able to kind of run this sort of distraction game and attack other governments as illegitimate, I think that ship has sailed now. Because it doesn't seem to me like this El Salvador thing got any traction at all. I don't know about you, but I didn't see any of those mainstream press outlets, sort of corporate legacy press outlets, pick this up. None. Once he started sharing screenshots, even that guy from the State Department really clamped up. So I don't know, Len, am I right about that? You think this is basically the end of this sort of, you know, U.S. exceptionalism accepted at home? I think it very well may be. I don't know if this is like the flashpoint, but there's definitely one coming. If it's, you know, 2 years or 5 years, I don't know. But this is an indicator to me that it's on the way.
I think a lot has to do with the advent of Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of ideas are now shared amongst people, and they're not reliant on mainstream media to provide them the information. So they're getting alternate sources of this information, and they could deduct their own reasoning on why it is something is taking place. And so what we experienced between Bukele and the U.S. officials, it is incredible. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before. This public a spat that basically brings something to the forefront that what it is they're asking, you know, evidence with screenshots, et cetera, et cetera. It's rather I don't want to say it's refreshing, but it's interesting at the very least. And I don't think we're going to see any more like of this moving forward. Like this will probably be taken behind closed doors. And you're right, people are going to be less and less likely to accept what they're given by officials at face value. They're going to be digging deeper to figure out what is going on. It's definitely turning over a new page. And where are we going to go from this place? It remains to be seen. The old way of doing things just doesn't seem to be able to be passing mustard anymore.
Isn't this really like why it's so important that they don't botch reporting on stuff as, you know, quote unquote, simple as inflation or as, you know, whether or not Brandon is reading end of message at the end of press conferences, like, you know, whether or not the guy is cognitively in decline or whatever, right? Like pick your sort of obvious issue. And they never tackle it, right? Like the Build Back Better bill costing zero, for example, would be another good example of this sort of erosion of public trust. I don't know why. I don't know how they think that they can muster support for the most important causes. For example, if there was a significant conflict with an overseas power, China comes to mind, how would they rally popular support from their citizens when they can't even rally popular support for, you know, sort of a derisive comment toward what is more or less a third world government? It's really bad news, man, for that country. And we really need them to be strong and on the right track, regardless of how you feel about their politics and policies and whatever. It's better when America is a strong nation and maybe the global superpower, debatable these days, but than the alternative. But this is not lend itself. Again, we said this last week. It's kind of funny to think about, but this is not something that you see with a government and an empire that has a lot of tread left on the tires.
Yeah, it certainly looks like it's on its last legs here. It's too bad because if it ever does go down, and it's going to take us down with it. It's not going to be done in a vacuum. It's going to be a domino effect, and everybody's going to feel it. Everybody in the Western world, quote unquote, is going to feel it. It's too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, moving on, Joey, let's talk about the next topic, which is U.S. inflation. And we just got the numbers very recently. So it looks like the numbers that came out, it kind of jives with the fact that inflation is no longer transitory. We talked about that narrative last week. And so November 2021, these are the inflation numbers. We have the CPI 6.8% expected was 6.8%. So it came right on exactly as they were expecting. And the CPI core was 4.9% and they were expecting 4.9%. So again, they were bang on. So as for the CPI, this is a jump of 0.6% from the previous month. And the numbers should increase well beyond 7%. And according to my quick math, when I look at the chart, we could be seeing inflation numbers beyond 9%. Starting from around the beginning of 2022, and that's probably going to be sustained for a period of time. Just a heads up, if you're looking to park your money somewhere, the 10-year treasuries are a solid 1.49%, so it's a great place to park your money if you want to lose it. just want to talk about the Build Back Better. You know, they're talking about it's going to reduce inflationary pressures. Get out of here. Like, doesn't make any sense it just doesn't make sense to me. And Dan from the Green Candles actually was talking about the labor force participation rate. He provided us a chart. I don't know if it was on Spaces or on a private chat, but I found it to be rather interesting. And the labor force participation rate indicates the percentage of all people of working age who are employed or are actively seeking work. And right now, if you look at that rate, we're currently sitting at rates around 1976. And keep in mind, this was a time when women were still entering the workforce. So there were still a lot of people entering the workforce and will be getting a job in not too distant future in 1976. So this is very interesting to see how far we have come from when we had peak employment around maybe the late 90s, early 2000s. And this number, it's obviously not a surprise that it's been declining ever since 2009. And it was actually a sharp drop off in March 2020. We know why. And these numbers after the big drop in March 2020 seems to have stabilized around the same numbers that we experienced back in 1976. So we're not getting too much better. It's kind of been plateauing for the past year and a half or so. And what this tells me, I did like just very, very brief analysis since 2009, it just seems like a lot less people are either working or seeking employment. And I'm wondering if this could be a reason why the inflation numbers are, I mean, part of the reason why inflation numbers are higher. We can understand why the supply chain printing of money, but also the fact that with less people working, there's less taxes that are being collected and more people looking for assistance. And this could also give a further strain on the balance sheet. And there was actually an article posted just yesterday about how to deal with rising inflation and include the positive title, Spend Your Paycheck Right Away. That's from Bloomberg. And I don't want to knock this too much. There is a little bit of validity to this. You're going to hate me for even defending the article. But in times where you have no way to park your money, and this has been done in the past where inflation is like hyperinflation, in fact, when you had a post-World War I Germany, Hungary in 1980s, Zimbabwe 10 years ago, Venezuela just a couple of years ago. The best way to actually do anything is just, at least in those situations, was buy something as soon as you get your paycheck. Because if you wait, you know, a day or even the same day, unfortunately, you've lost a lot. So what people used to do is just buy something right away. So this notion of spending your paycheck right away to combat inflation, there is some validity to that, but right now we have other alternatives. You could quickly buy Bitcoin, for instance. And even if you wanted to put your money on the equities market, you could quickly do so. There's no long turnover. So although this notion does make sense, at least it did make sense in the old way of doing things, in the modern way, the modern world, I don't think so. Find a way to park your money. This inflation is just going to eat away any savings. Don't spend your money frivolously. Just find something. If you're going to buy something, make sure it's the right purchase, because you know we are in for some really difficult times moving forward, Joey.
Len, that Bloomberg article is like a mind melting bit of journalism from what used to be a pillar of the business news world. These guys talking about the lessons we can take from countries where the inflation has gotten so bad that people have to spend their paycheck the same hour they receive it. And it's not even in jest. It's like meant to be cooking tips on the same sort of playing field as charge people cover charges for Thanksgiving dinner. Like, it's only a joke unless you actually mean it. And in which case, well, what are you suggesting? Like, people should actually do it. And in the article, they're talking about you got to buy cars and appliances and homes. The thing about inflation, Len, is that you can't just go out and buy a home every paycheck. You got to save the money. But if in the same article, they tell you that you got to spend the money right away, well, you got a bit of a problem there, don't you? You're not going to be able to buy any durable goods. You're just going to be burning cash on, you know, mangoes, cantaloupes, and tuna as soon as you get it and hoping that the stuff holds for a week and you can eat it with your family and not wind up malnourished with scurvy eating nothing but KD. Anyway, I digress. Let's talk about the numbers in the inflation report. They're a farce. Okay. They are a farce. And we do this every week, not every week, but every inflation reporting day, every inflation drop day where we talk about how the inflation numbers are off and blah, blah, blah. You know this, we know this, we're not going to rehash it. But instead today, I want to give you something tangible to take to the normies in your life who think the inflation numbers are accurate. And that thing is called owner's equivalent rent. Okay. So friend of the show, Bill Ackman, not actually a friend of the show, I'm just joking. He's like a big time investor, but he put out a good series of tweets on the 10th about homeowners equivalent rent and why it's a scam. Okay. So I'm going to give you the definition here from Investopedia. It's the best definition I could find. Owner's equivalent rent is a statistic that is followed by homeowners and tracked by the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics. Generally, owner's equivalent rent is obtained through surveys asking homeowners the following question. If someone were to rent your home today, how much do you think it would rent for monthly, unfurnished, and without utilities? Okay? That's the definition of homeowner's equivalent rent. Now, here's the thing, okay? Here's Ackman on the 10th. Reported inflation is understated. Homeowner's equivalent rent relies on owner surveys. We know this, whatever. The data the single family rental market provides is more accurate. The owner's equivalent rent reported in the CPI, the core CPI, was 3.5% year over year, 3.5%. Okay. The largest owners of nationwide single family rentals are reporting 17% year over year increases, five times what the owner's equivalent rent is, 500% more. OER, the equivalent rent number, is 30% of the core CPI calculation and 24% of reported CPI. If you use the actual measure for the people who are actually renting the homes and getting the rent payments, core CPI goes from 4.9% to 9%, and CPI goes from 6.8% to 10.1% month over month, year over year. That's a huge fucking jump, Len. Okay? That is a huge jump. And so I will say one more time here, what you are seeing with these numbers is a continued effort, okay, to mislead the global financial markets on the true inflation number by the most important economy on the planet. There's no doubt about this. The idea that when hard figures, okay, with people who actually have skin in the game, are available in the through the lens of single family rental costs, and instead they call you up on the phone to ask you what you would rent your house for if you were renting it to someone unfurnished, is insane. It is completely insane that they collect data this way and then spin it to you as accurate data that you should be sort of looking to when you're financially planning the next year or 2 years. The labor market, Len, similar story, okay? It's a shell game of who's looking, who's not looking, who's working, who's not working, et cetera, okay? We said then, and I'll say it again now, these are not indicative of the true despair among job seekers. These guys have stopped looking for work, okay? They're living off who knows what kind of government handout or what kind of gig work, short-term work, under-the-table work, whatever, okay? But either way, this is not any way for these people to be living, so to speak. And so I would just suggest to you that what we're seeing here, what we've already really started seeing, but I think what we're going to see officially in the next year or 2 years is the devolution of the term work and the definition of the term work. The same way we've seen sort of this this sort of erosion of what it means to live and the cost of living thing, right? You know, 20 years ago, when you said live to somebody, they would have said a couple of kids, a dog, like we talked about before, some time to volunteer, a picket fence, whatever. Now it's, you know, what is it? It's a one-bedroom apartment, Doritos, Xbox, Pornhub, and Jewel Pods. Like, that's really not living, but that's what you would think is living, judging by the cost of living that's being translated to you through these CPI numbers and it's, you know, other metrics that the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the U.S. government uses to spin positive stories to you. None of this makes any sense if you go back to first principles. But that aside, there's going to be, I think, a change in what people say when they say work. So how long is it, you figure, until the BLS doesn't look at work as a 9-to-5 or a job where you work 30 hours or even 25 hours a week on a regular schedule, right? Something where you get a schedule 2 weeks in advance, you can plan your life around your job, which already you maybe shouldn't have to do, arguably, but let's say for this argument, you are expected to do something like that. The definition of work is going to devolve to this, oh yeah, no, he's working, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, if you're waiting around at your house, sleeping all day, and then around 5 o'clock, you have to turn on Uber Eats and fetch food for people until the wee hours of the night. And at which point you change to picking up and driving drunk co-eds around major cities, hoping they don't throw up on the carpet of your, you know, mid-tier fuel-efficient four-door coupe.
Plastic everything. It'll be okay.
Just so you can make ends meet. Just so you can keep your premium Pornhub subscription, buy a new Jewel Pod, and keep your phone charged to get the Uber app running again the same time the next night while you sleep all day. This is what's going to happen, okay? I'm telling you, this is what's going to happen. There's going to be this change in what work is defined as. And they're going to spin it as this super positive thing. It's the gig economy, okay? It's the, oh, well, these people are all working on their own terms. Their own terms, Len. They're not working on their own terms. These people are barely making it by. They're barely making it by. This is, by no one's definition, living, okay? The CEOs and the politicians and the policymakers who will be the first to tell you that, you know, these people are making it, they're doing okay, they would never let their own children live this way. They would do everything in their power to make sure their kids would not live this way. You would do that for your kid. I would do that for my kid. Everyone with a brain would do this for their children and the people they love. But this is what's going to happen, okay? I'm telling you, this is coming down the pipeline, and you got to be ready for this kind of spin on language. And I'll just also add here that Zero Hedge put out a tweet on December 10th that I still haven't really dug into from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. And it says, January 2022 CPI weight update. Starting January 2022, weights for the Consumer Price Index will be calculated based on the consumer expenditure data from 2019-20. the BLS considered interventions but decided to maintain normal procedures. I don't know what that means, but the people who asked me on Twitter today and people who have asked me in the last like hour or so about this tweet, I would just say like, look, even if you don't know anything about this tweet, do you think that they're making procedural changes or data collection changes or reporting changes because the inflation number is too low or because the inflation number is too high?
Well, they're doing everything they can to spin it in such a way that it looks good for them. So.
And I'm getting dizzy, buddy. The spin is starting to make me dizzy because I've been spinning now for 18 months and it's just getting worse. 6.8%. Like you said, I think you said this last week about the Canadian numbers. This is the lowest possible number they could fudge for you. It's as low as they could go. Okay. And I'll tell you something else. And I was saying this to me and Massa were talking about this during the week. Guys like Bill Ackman, whose tweets I just read, and Jeff Gundlach, who did a presentation for his firm Double Line a couple of weeks ago that you and I think watched maybe on a Wednesday afternoon or Thursday afternoon. You know, these guys manage a lot of money and have reputation to protect. And so pretty soon you're going to see a lot of guys in this boat, and it's going to start to include people like Tim Cook, Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, Elon, all these guys who are sort of playing along right now because it's not really affecting them or their reputation just yet. But at some point, okay, these guys are all going to have to choose. Am I going to keep my reputation intact here and tell people, not only my clients, but the rest of the investing world, what's really going on so that I can keep this money under my purview, my assets under management up, and not risk just pretending that I don't know what the problem is and looking like I'm wrong? Or am I just going to tell them that they're being lied to by the government numbers? I know where I think they're going to come down, and it looks like they're starting to come down there already. And I would just, man, like, you know, Dan in the chat is saying, when the data doesn't fit your hypothesis, change the language. And that's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to change the word employed or the word work to mean something that makes more sense for the numbers. And they're going to spin it like crazy to make it a positive thing. And, you know, you could ask anybody who's driving Uber or cabs or whatever, you know, picking up queso dip for some chronically overweight video game addict 6 o'clock on a Friday night instead of being with their family, whether or not they think that's a job they want to keep and something they would call living. I know what answer you'll get.
Joey, this has been a shell game forever. You know, and just now we have the ability to analyze data at a pace that we couldn't have done so before. Again, we're through social media, you know, through Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, whatever. We have access to a lot more information, and we could make our own decisions based on the information that's been fed to us, or that would actually, sorry, not fed to us, that we could actually see it and digest. So this is clearly just, it's been a shell game for a long time, and we're just now calling it out for what it is. It's total and utter crap. So it is too bad. Yeah. Because it, really in the end, who suffers? It's, you know, the people that, you know, the lower class and middle class are the ones that ultimately feel a pinch, and people up top, now, I'm sure they feel it too, but probably not to the same extent that the rest of the population does. So
yeah,
something needs to be done.
And then don't forget, like, these are the people who, like, there's no upward mobility there, right? Like, if I get a, you know, when I think about when I finished university, like, I had a couple of jobs that I liked, I enjoyed them, but I wouldn't have stayed there for any longer than I absolutely had to. And, you know, I look at the guys who are driving Uber and Lyft and DoorDash and whatever, right? The Jewel Pod, Doritos, and Xbox crowd. Where's the upward mobility? How are you going to get out of this? You can't. You're spinning your wheels because you have, on one hand, these guys talking about, you know, gig economy. It's a new way to work, blah, blah, blah. And then this, you know, the same publication that writes this in 6 months is writing today, you have to spend your paycheck right away or it loses value. Like, it is a never ending just spiral. It's a spiral. And I worry about these people because this is where you start to get unrest. It's where you start to get problems with family starts. It's where you start to get problems with demographics. It's where you start to get, like, this is how a lot of those problems begin, with despair. And you might be closer to that than you think in the first world at the moment.
I'm not sure if you saw today, there was an interesting post I saw that there were more people that off themselves. I don't want to say exactly what happened, but they just basically wiped themselves off the face of the earth. Then there were people that died due to a certain illness. This was in the city of San Francisco. So more people were, you know, basically did themselves in versus they were killed versus, you know, some sort of virus that may be floating around.
The trendy illness. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's crazy. That's pretty, it is. But yeah, let's move on, Joey. I want to talk about the last item on my agenda here. It's I'll be going to be kind of quick here. There was actually there's potential cyber attack on the global financial system that's being played out right now. And not that it is being played out, but there's some sort of simulation at the very least. And Israel on December 9th led a 10 country simulation of a major cyber attack on global financial system in an attempt to increase cooperation that could help to minimize any potential damage to financial markets and banks. And this 10 country simulation included Israel, which I already mentioned, United States, the UK, United Arab Emirates, Austria, Switzerland, Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, and Thailand. And then there was the unholy alliance of the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and the Bank for International Settlements, the three stooges that are the no coiners of the financial world. And this feature the several types of attacks that impacted global foreign exchanges and bond markets. And this is all simulation. So it didn't quite take place, but so these foreign exchanges, bond markets, liquidity and integrity of data and transaction between importers and exporters. So they were actually doing a simulation to attack a number of different places by a number of different vectors. So it's actually pretty interesting that they were doing this. The one thing I want to know is, with this information that they're gaining from this, I'm wondering if they could actually use it for an exploitation, maybe to destabilize financial markets for their own gain. I just wonder if that's the case. I don't exactly know.
Help me. I can't believe this storyline. Not another one.
Lots of variables here. I don't know how to take this, but I do know that they are doing some sort of simulation on global financial systems through a major cyber attack. So this is being reported by Reuters. It's not coming out of left field. Like, I'm not just, you know, making this shit up. Very, very odd that this story was being reported. And you know what? Lots to digest. And I don't know what is going to be the outcome for this, but certainly it's something that we have to note and figure out what may be the plan going forward.
Do you think it's funny that in the details about this, okay? This is a quote from the article. The simulated war game, as Israel's finance ministry called it and planned over the past year, evolved over 10 days with sensitive data emerging on the dark web. The simulation also used fake news reports that in the scenario caused chaos in global markets and a run on banks. Len, how much worse could the fake news they used in the drill be than the real news right now? COVID scares, inflation is through the roof. End of message reading from the president, reserve status being threatened by Bitcoin. No one is buying domestic, like governments are buying all their own bonds, keeping the interest rates low and propping up their economies all over the world. No one believes the media anymore. No one believes politicians anymore. What is the fake news that would cause the run on banks that's not already real news every day? What am I missing there?
Hey, man, I'm not
going to... How much more is going to get?
I don't want to even speculate. We've gotten to a point which in my lifetime, I don't think we would have gotten to. There's almost nothing that could really surprise me at this point.
Okay, other funny thing here, okay? The crisis due to an attack, okay, or outage or whatever they say, is only possible in a fractional reserve system that's spun out of control. Because like you mentioned before, and I think we either talked about this in Spaces or on the Nooner or somewhere, you and I are talking too much. We're talking too much. We've been talking too much over the last little while, or maybe in one of the Instagram or Twitter chats, whatever.
Yeah, I don't do Instagram.
Whatever. So we got in one of these chats, we were saying that, it's almost better if this were to happen to like Tether, because Tether at least is claiming to be backed 1-to-1. The US dollar cannot make that claim. They're down like, God only knows what the ratio is after all the credit and other vehicles they've sort of manipulated and spun out of thin air.
Joey, I don't mean to interrupt, but if it is Tether, and hypothetically, if it is backed 1-to-1 and there's a run on Tether, it could hypothetically run out and there's no more Tether to go around. But yeah. With the US dollar, you don't have that same type of result because theoretically they could continually create more and the run.
So how can there be a run on banks then if they're just pumping it out? Like if it's all just on some Excel sheet somewhere, like if Jerome is just in his basement, like where his hostage takers make him just keep adding zeros to the cell in Excel. Well, I don't know, man. And like other thing I would just say,
again, like I was going to put on a tinfoil hat for this. I actually thought to myself this morning, I'm going to make a tinfoil hat and wear it. But then I looked at the price of tinfoil and it's inflating to infinity. So I don't want to waste any money on that. So before you know it, it's going to be on the commodities fucking market tinfoil. So, anyways, I didn't make the hat.
Included on a CPI.
Yeah. So I didn't make the hat. And but I was just going to say, like, look, tinfoil hat Joey says that every time there's been a simulation like this or a game like this, it materializes IRL not too many months and years later. So keep your eye out for that. And, I continue to be amazed at the things that make it into the media. I don't know what to believe, what not to believe. I have no idea. I'm not going to pretend I know, but I'll just say you got to be prepared. Okay. I'm not buying like the mountain food yet that stays for like 3,000 years without being in a fridge, but I'm a lot closer today than I was a year ago. And I feel like I'm getting closer every hour here doing this goddamn show. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm ready to see what's up. I'm ready to see what's up in a few months. See if this comes to reality here.
Sometimes it's just better to bury your head in the sand and just forget what's going on in the world. But then I guess that's what kind of led us to this mess. So maybe that's probably not the best course of action to take. But
I don't know, man.
I digress. But yeah, that's it for the A block, Joey. Transitioning over to the Canadian stories. First off, really quick, we touched upon it already. ShakePay opened up the Visa reward cards to everybody in the wait list. So if you are looking to get a Visa, ShakePay Visa rewards card, what are you waiting for? You can just get it right now, and it's a great way to earn sats. So that's big news that came out this past week from our sponsor, ShakePay. Then following that up,
how many boosts do you have on yours? If you don't have the card yet, send me your Shake tag and I'll put you on the boost list. Cause I've been trying to add people to get the boost or whatever, but everyone's beating me to it. How did this happen? I thought everyone was going to wait for me to give them the boost, and now I'm still stuck at 1% or whatever the basement rate is.
I like what Hardy wrote. He says, Len, blink three times if you need our help. Great stuff. Okay, so piggybacking off that ShakePay Visa rewards card, I want to transition to Netcoins. And Netcoins just launched their Netcoins Pay, and it's also a Bitcoin rewards prepaid card. And all rewards will be earned in CAD and automatically converted into Bitcoin at set intervals by Netcoins. And Netcoins Pay will have the following features. You're going to be earning 3% Bitcoin back for the first 3 months. Then you'll earn 1% Bitcoin back beyond that. There's no monthly or annual account fees. Easily top it up using Interact e-transfer, same as we do with ShakePay, Google Pay, and Apple Pay support, just like ShakePay. And you have a choice of a virtual and or a physical card. And it also notes that users earn 3% back in Bitcoin on all purchases made up for the card for the first 3 months. And the total rewards can be earned is capped at $100. So keep that in mind. So there's seems to be some deviation between the Netcoins Pay and ShakePay Visa card. Also, one thing I've noted, there's going to be a fee of $1 if there's inactivity for over 90 days. So if you don't use the card for at least 90 days, you're going to get charged $1 for having it. And there's also a foreign exchange transaction fee of 1.5%. I should have remembered or wrote down what was ShakePay's transaction fee for foreign transactions, but Netcoins is going to be 1.5%. So here we go. We have another card on the horizon. You could sign up and join a wait list. It's not yet released, but the wait list is now live. If you want to do it, be my guest. More cards, more the merrier. That's my thoughts.
Anything that's going to drive like competition, this sort of race to zero, as it were, I'm in on it. So Netcoins may not have the best card now. ShakePay may not have the best card in a month. And the more of these companies that jump on, the more competition is present for your dollars and your spending, and the better these cards will get. So I don't have the Netcoins card, although I do have a Netcoins account. I got a Netcoins account a little while ago after we had Mark on. I thought it's something I should do since he was such a great guest. Do you have a Netcoins account? You do, right?
Yeah. I sure do.
Yeah. Are you going to get the card?
I may give it a shot just to try it out and do comparison between the ShakePay card and the Netcoins card. Mm-hmm. If it's free, why not? And, then I could have a better idea how each of them perform, and I could maybe report back to our viewers and listeners which one I think is better in certain situations. But right now, ShakePay all the way, because it's the only card available. So keep that in mind.
Definitely not because they're show sponsors, but
no,
I would
the only card available. Like that's
truthfully as well, though. Yochi in the chat is saying the right thing here. This whole like transaction limit at $100 is it's kind of stingy. To me, I mean, I'm not really up on payment rails and the limitations there, but it seems like a low number. I want to know more about that. Why the number is so low? I guess we'll find out over time here.
Yeah, I hopefully they address that. I mean, whatever, it is what it is. Joey, let's move on. Neptune Digital Assets. We talk about them every so often. In fact, we might be talking to their CEO in a not too distant future. And something I want to talk to them about is they launched their DeFi program for generating new revenue stream. And they've integrated multiple DeFi blockchain protocols into its DeFi program. Phantom and Avalanche are two examples of decentralized finance protocols that are being used by Neptune. Neptune, up until this point, I believe only mined, Bitcoin and a few shitcoins from what I recall. Actually, quite a few shitcoins. But now they're moving on into the DeFi space. It seems to be, quite a split in the road here. If you're an investor in Neptune Digital Assets and this is something you like, good for you. If it's something you don't like, well, you have an opportunity to act upon it. So they're now moving into the DeFi blockchain protocol sphere. Whatever. We'll talk to them and try to get some more information in a not too distant future, Joey.
Yeah, we have NDA coming on early January, I think. I don't know what to think about stuff like this. I don't know if we have Hutt at all in the news, Len, but do we?
Very next story.
Okay, so I'll leave this then. But the long and short is that there seems to be a move from miners related to DeFi, and it seems to be speeding up. I have a theory on that, but I'll save it for the Hutt story since they just did their investor Q&A spaces today. I'll hold off.
Okay, so we'll talk we'll talk about Hutt 8. Okay, we'll talk about the good. So they announced a purchase of M30S equipment. This is Bitcoin mining equipment from MicroBT. And so this is going to be obviously increasing their hash rate. It's going to increase their hash rate by another 228 petahash per second. Good on them. They're actually right now they're at 1.94 exahash per second. Once all these miners are up and running, it's going to be running looks like by the end of this year. So they're moving quickly on that. Also on the Hut 8 front, they announced ESG goals to drive a more sustainable future. And their primary objectives are centered around a suite of goals that extend to all aspects of corporate social responsibilities, including achieving carbon neutrality for scope 1 and 2 greenhouse gas emissions by 2025, reduce emissions through technological and operational innovation, focus on corporate diversity across employee representation, including the goal to achieve 25% employee representation from women. And they want to maintain executive management team gender diversity of over 40% of women and maintaining board gender diversity representing over 30% of women. So looks like they're trying to achieve a number of different goals here. I'm not sure how to digest it. I guess I'm going to leave you to talk about it, Joey. And if you're not going to, I'll let the people figure this one out. Also, one last news from Hut 8. They were also added to the S&P Dow Jones indices. And this is going to take place on Monday, December 20th, 2021. So that's actually pretty good news, the fact that they're being added to that. So all in all, some interesting news coming out of the Hut camp. What are your thoughts, Joey?
Hut stays winning, for sure. We were at the spaces today, the investor sort of Q&A, where they take questions from the Twitterati, and I'm going to leave the board diversity thing alone. I think that's a capable management team. And so if Jamie and company want to do board diversity, I have faith that they will hire or bring in people that make sense for the company, make sense for the bottom line. They will care as much about the boxes that the new board members, new candidates check as they do about their experience and the quality of work they have on their resume. So I'm not that worried about that. On the call today, did you go to that whole thing? Were you there for the whole thing?
No, I was there for a brief time, maybe 5-10 minutes at most.
Okay, so Sue mentioned It was either Sue or Jamie, because they do the call together, right? And one
Jamie
of
had her own. Like, Sue was the host, and Jamie.
Jamie's on there with her own Twitter account, and so we were listening to it, and one of them said something that really caught my eye, because we talk a lot on the show about chip shortages and about Ethereum 2.0, blah blah blah. So during this Ethereum 2.0 section, where they talk about the migration, potential migration, the commentary from them I thought was really telling. They put a lot of color on some stuff that you and I have discussed in theory and sort of guessed on, but they basically laid it out today. One, they don't think Ethereum is going to move to proof of stake anytime soon. Okay. We've discussed that before. Their CapEx kind of leans that way anyways. We talked about how they're spending money still on GPUs, and that doesn't spell a lot of confidence for the Ethereum network moving to proof of stake, although they would have you believe they are. It seems like the people with the most skin in the game just don't see it. Second, and also equally important piece, they never have chip shortages like we talked about. Do you know where they buy their GPU miners from?
No.
Directly from Nvidia. I'm not too familiar with it. Directly from Nvidia.
Okay.
So they get it right from the trough. They don't have to buy it through a secondary supplier. They don't buy it through any other kind of contract or whatever.
Sorry to interrupt. Is this common amongst purchasing mass GPU?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I know there's other people who make GPUs, right? Like you can get an AMD chip, or not AMD. What is the other? It's Ryzen or something like that. I forget the name of the other graphics chip.
That's AMD.
There's another, but there's another GPU maker, right? And so I don't know if they're both doing this or if it's just Nvidia that's doing this, but I thought that was interesting because Nvidia makes a ton of stuff for a ton of different companies that's widely used. And if Nvidia is selling to Hut directly at the volume that they're buying, that tells you that Nvidia is also very much interested in Ethereum staying on proof of work and not proof of stake, along with all these other GPU mineable coins. So I really am having a difficult time understanding how you can think Ethereum is going to move to F2.0 anytime soon. I would love for someone who listens to this show who, you know, thinks that Ethereum is the next best thing, or, you know, is actually going to move to proof of stake instead of proof of work, and how that might look and what the timeline is. I got to hear the argument, because the people who are talking to you about what they think with, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars are telling you that it's not going to happen. And to me, I think that's enough for me to think that it's not going to be a problem. And, you know, like we've also discussed, we didn't ask this question today in the Q&A, but the fact that they don't think it's going to move to proof of stake and then are just market dumping, because they're not hodling any Ethereum. That's another thing they said. They're just market dumping the Ethereum on people who do think they're going to move to proof of stake, presumably because they think the price is going to go up when that happens, right? I mean, this is like, it's insulting to people who are into Ethereum. And I would just caution you, if you're buying that as a hedge, you know, maybe you get a price jump in Ethereum if Bitcoin really rips. But I think the more likely outcome is this thing kind of starts folding in on itself once DeFi gets regulated, and it's going to in 2022. Once NFTs kind of fall by the wayside in their current iteration, I think there's room for non-fungible tokens as a part of a functioning crypto ecosystem at some point, but it ain't in 8-bit JPEGs. It ain't in the stuff that we're using it for now. And so I would just caution against this sort of this move to use Ethereum as a hedge. And to High-Rise comment, I dislike them going into DeFi. I'm with you. And I think he's talking about NDA, but Hut mentioned it as well, this sort of Web3 thing they're planning on sort of starting to look at. I think they're doing it because they're market dumping everything anyways. And so they think that the market for DeFi is dumb enough to continue buying the shit that they don't want at a premium. And who am I to tell them no? I'm a big HUD 8 investor. I got a lot of HUD 8, way too much HUD 8, and probably going to be more this week if the price keeps moving against them, because that's like, you know, the golden rule is buy the dips on the companies you have faith in. And I don't do DeFi, but I understand why they do it. And I'm okay with it. If it adds to the bottom line and gives them more flexibility, more optionality down the road because of the capital it brings in, God bless them. That's fine with me.
There's the elephant in the room that the SEC might move in and decide, the Howey test, you know, not looking good here because of the fact that they do the pre-mine, and a lot of people made a lot of money as a result of that. So that's something else. And when you also look at it, the competitors, maybe Solana, for instance, this past week, Solana had some issues where they had to stop the network. There was some.
What's the guy say? What's the Solana guy say? It doesn't matter if the network goes down. Like, that's all that matters if you're really competing to be money. That's all that matters.
Yeah. So there seems to be a lot of issues here that obviously we can't answer. And you know, especially when you have regulatory bodies like the SEC that might move in and really drop their hammer down on Ethereum. Moving forward, it's questionable what's going to happen. You could predict, but it's not really guaranteed that that outcome is going to play out. So, you know, do your own research because you don't know what the heck's going to happen.
But as a HUD shareholder, which you are, I think, that news doesn't scare you away, does it? And Next Level Tech in the chat is saying that, you know, there's around $25 billion being staked on ETH 2.0, and it's not money that they'll have access to until 2.0 is released. That may be the case, but like HUT doesn't have to worry about that, I don't think. They're using that's part of the reason they're able to dump ETH on people, because there's a lot of people who are like, oh, it's going to be available, it's going to add to the, but it just doesn't look like that's the case. And maybe we'll be proven wrong, but every time these guys spend another $50 million on miners and, you know, continue to not hold on to their Ethereum, it really just tells you that that's not what they think. And what they think matters a lot more than people in the space realize, the same way that what the miners think in Bitcoin matters. It's not sort of a one-sided affair here. So I'm anxious to see what the next 3 or 4 months looks like. Cause I think that Ethereum posits they'll move to proof of stake in the first quarter of 2022, right? That's the most recent. Oh.
Yeah,
it is. I think right. I got to look at Marty Bent's tweet on F2.0. It's like 5 years old now, but I think the most recent one I saw was Q1 2022. So
it's an ever moving goalpost. It's never, ever going to be there. They're not planting that in the ground. It doesn't make sense to do that because it's non achievable goal. They have to do hard forks on their network every so often to make it stable. Like there are some fundamental issues with the protocol that need to be addressed. And you know what? I can't say I do know the whole thing about it. I'm far from being in Ethereum authorities. I don't really follow it that much, but there seems to be a lot of questions around it, and whatever. I'll leave it up to somebody else to figure out. I'm going to be concentrating.
Yeah, it's not for us.
Yeah. Moving on, Joey, I want to talk about Fortress Technologies, and they're no longer Fortress Technologies. They changed their name to Cathedra Bitcoin, and their new ticker is CBIT. So obviously there's been a name change. They have a new ticker. So if you used to be an investor in Ford and realized you have now no longer Ford in your portfolio and CBIT, well, that's the reason why. It's very, very exciting company. They looks like they're doing a lot of interesting stuff. Their power generation that is also going to be, power generation that is going to equate to mining Bitcoin. Check them out. Really, really interesting company. I think that they have a lot of room for growth, and I think they're going to achieve whatever type of growth they want to set out. So keep that in mind. If you're an investor in them, I think that there's going to be a lot of room for getting profit. So I like them. Cathedra Bitcoin, good on them. And their one of their directors, Marty Bent, we know him, a very good guy. I think that he's going to do good things for that company.
Yeah, Marty. From an equities side of things, not maybe the direction of the company, but if you're a formerly Cathedra investor now, one of the things you got to like is that Marty was one of the founding members, I guess you would say, of this 1031 Capital. 1031 is the day that Bitcoin white paper was released, October 31st, 08, I think, or 09, whatever it was. You know, he's going to have a lot of connections to industry people and presumably can use those connections to help better a company like Cathedra as they grow. And they're still very young. They're sort of, you know, they've been trading publicly for some time, but they're still a young company as far as outputs and what to expect from them is on the productivity and hashing and whatnot side. So I like this company. I think that, you know, anytime a company moves from sort of crypto orientation to Bitcoin orientation, I'm for it. And Marty obviously has his own inclinations about where Bitcoin should be and the synergy with energy producers and whatnot. And all that stuff lines up pretty well. So I'm happy to be a shareholder, small position, but shareholder nonetheless. And I want to see where they go. I'm excited about that company.
Number go up, Joey. Number go up.
Not this week.
Moving on, Joey, let's talk about the Bank of Canada. And they decided not to change their interest rates for the time being. So we have cheap credit that will be available for the foreseeable future. And we have rumblings going on for a little bit of maybe last few weeks, maybe a little bit longer, of potential rate hikes in 2022. So expect discussion will be coming out more and more. If there is going to be a change in the inflation, in the interest rates, keep in mind it's probably going to be small. If that, I can't see them doing big changes, especially successive big changes quarter over quarter. So they have some very difficult decisions to decide what to do moving forward. And also their mandate just today was renewed. In fact, it was renewed this morning, and the Bank of Canada renews their 2% inflation target. And they have the 1% to 3% control bands. And they say their primary objective remains low and stable inflation. Good luck, man. I don't know how you're going to be achieving this, given you have your interest rates are very, very low. It seems that you're going to let inflation run unchecked for some time. The only way really to address it, I mean, not really the only way, but one way to address it would be to raise rates. But doing that might be a very, very difficult decision, because a lot of people will be negatively impacted because people are carrying more and more debt over the past year and a half. And if they're, you know, if they do raise interest rates, servicing that debt's going to be even more difficult. And man, oh man, it's going to be, I you know what? I'll leave it up to you, Joey. What do you want to talk about in this one?
Look, Len, there's an election there's going to be an election in 2022. Okay. There's going to be, it's either going to be in late 2022 or early 23 for the feds at the federal level.
I don't want to talk too much politics here.
And so, so politics aside, I would just say that it's politically unpalatable to raise rates at almost at any time. Certainly now, as we've discussed, that kind of the veil around savings and checking accounts and, you know, home ownership and employment and stuff like that, these veils are kind of falling by the wayside. And people are in a situation where they can't stomach, you know, a little bit of extra monthly expenditure. And, you know, raising rates is exactly what causes that little bit of monthly expenditure for the biggest number of people. You're going to find that, I think, in a year where there's an election, you know, even if it's not early 2023, let's say it's halfway through, you know, if you start raising rates, and we've talked about this before, I think, you know, whether we agree on the election cycle or not, there's no doubt that raising rates will cause a stir among a huge portion of the electorate. And I don't think they're going to do it, Len. I don't think they can do it. I really do not. I don't see them raising, certainly not at any material level. Like if they, you know, push out one interest rate hike, you know, 0.25%, maybe that's what they can get through. But then I look at the situation now with the big O word as far as the virus, and you know, people are panicking about case counts and are not, as if we've learned nothing over the last 2 years. And there's a great number of people who would prefer this to continue as a veil for poor policy decisions and sort of unintentional policy outcomes. And so I think what you're more likely to see is that this continues to reign supreme as a narrative item. And we just continue down this, you know, zero negative interest rate environment. And, you know, there's no end in sight, at least not until an election happens. Because I mean, maybe you know more than me from experience, but I just can't imagine a war room where these guys are going, yeah, for sure, raising rates. Good, that's a good thing to do as we go to the box. I just can't imagine it.
Yeah, it would certainly hurt a large number of people, but it may appease some of the corporate entities out there. So it's a balancing act you're going to have to deal with. And I'm not the person that's in charge there, so I'm thankful of that, because it's very difficult decisions to make. And yeah, moving on, the last story I want to talk about on the Canadian side is there's actually some news coming out of Calgary. There's a new digital assets trust company that's going to make Calgary its Canadian headquarters, and Brain Trust, BRANE, Trust Company Limited. And this is a division of Brain Inc. We talked about Brain Inc. in the past. And they're looking for office space, and they're undergoing a hiring spree for 100 new staff members. And they're going to provide safe high security storage for cryptocurrency, so it could be better accessed by individuals through their banks or investment purposes. Very interesting story, Joey. So it looks like they're going to be latching on to the bank side of things. And I'm wondering what's going to come out from all this. There's a lot of reading between the lines here, but it looks like Brain Trust Company is going to try getting on the ground floor here and try to get cozy up with the banks and maybe provide some services with the banks. I'm curious to see what transpires through all this, Joey. It's very interesting stuff.
This is kind of a surprise story, eh?
When did this come out? Sorry, I missed that last part you said.
When did this come out?
Within this past week, specifically, if you give me a sec.
How did I miss
December
that?
9th.
Yeah, so Thursday last week. That's, yeah. I don't know, Len. I don't know. That's, you know, there's going to be a lot more like this where there's going to be, you know, sort of first movers showing up that are unexpected, trying to make a play on what's obviously a growing ecosystem with growing demand. So I don't know. I really have no color on this. I have no background, not much to add, but something to keep an eye on. It's another good snipe by you this week.
Thank you. And that's it for the Canadian side. Let's transition to the rest of the news. First up, I want to talk about CleanSpark. That's a Bitcoin mining company. And they bought 20 megawatt immersion cooled infrastructure for its facility in Georgia. And they're aiming to increase their mining efficiency by over 20% as a result of this immersion cooling. And the technology is going to, it's expected to make the operations more sustainable and efficient. Immersion cooling seems to be all the rage these days. So I, you know, everybody that's doing Bitcoin mining en masse, it looks like they're at least dipping their toes, so, pardon the pun, in the immersion cooling waters. It makes sense because you could overclock the equipment. And even if you don't overclock it, you could run at the same speed and it's not stressing the equipment out at the same if you're doing air cooling. So yeah, good on CleanSpark. Wish them the best. And I hope this works out for them because this is something that's going to make their operations even more profitable.
I love profits, Len. It's the best word in the English dictionary these days. And I think immersion is going to be key to beating back the ESG people as well. It seems like you can get a little more firepower out with a little less, little less footprint, we'll say. I almost don't even want to go down this rabbit hole, but you know what I'm saying. I like this technology, and I hope that more companies really employ this en masse in the next year or so.
I'm going to do some immersion cooling myself. Maybe I'll be more efficient in doing my job. We'll see if anything transpires.
What are you thinking? Ice bath or something?
Something. I got to do this.
You got room for that in there? Will your captors allow that? Seems like it might go against the credo of your captors there. I'm not sure.
They've been good to me, Joey. Let's not talk negatively on them. Let's move on and talk about Iris Energy. They're traded under the ticker IREN. They gave us their November 2021 update. So they had their IPO and it was $232 million was generated through their NASDAQ IPO. This is a company that's going to be transitioning to 15 exahash. They essentially secured miners for 15 exahash per second. And they plan to be one of the biggest Bitcoin miner operations out there. They're currently hashing out at 0.7 exahash per second. 0.8 exahash are shipped in 2021. And they have another 5.7 exahash to be shipped in 2022, and another 8 exahash planned to be shipped out in 2023. All said and done, they're planning to get to 15.2 exahash in 2023. Not too shabby. So here's a company that's going to be growing at a very fast rate. So if you want in, IREN. And not to be outdone, there's some more information. They have a 1 gigawatt pipeline. So their construction and development is taking place in Mackenzie, BC, and that's going to expect it to deliver about 1.5 exahash per second from that facility. They also have Prince George, BC. They're just breaking ground. That's another 1.4 exahash that's going to be coming out of that. And so, yeah, it's constantly growing. Great company. They have facilities in Canada, United States, and the Asian Pacific area. So they're spread out globally. So they're not concentrated on one spot. I like this company. They're doing all the right things. They're growing and they're publicly traded. So we have an opportunity to buy small equity in their company. So I love it, Joy.
That's good. I would just say that, you know, do you think, Len, that when the price, you know, goes down from 49 to 46 and maybe down to 43, that they're just going to halt all that growth, just cut it off, say, forget about it?
They're transition to an ETH mine. Yeah. Screw this ASIC shit. Let's do GPO.
securing the network, even as the price goes down, makes the price go back up. That's the lesson. Pay attention to this kind of stuff. CapEx is important, and you're seeing it all over the place.
They're thinking long-term. That's the reality. Yeah. And so all these companies are thinking long-term, and so are investors. The price may be down a little bit today, but you know, we all have ideas where it's going to be tomorrow.
Yeah.
Moving on, we'll talk about Foundry Services, and they officially launched Foundry X, and this US-based secondary market for ASICs. Not too bad. And this is going to help strengthen the secondhand equipment market for mid to large scale miners, but still the prices are going to be probably pricing out the smaller mining operations, because the minimum order is 50 ASIC miners you're going to have to order from them. But still, there seems to be a secondhand market that's developing. Foundry is going to be running it through their Foundry X division. So good stuff. Let's see if this is going to transpire into where you actually buy it at a smaller minimum order. Right now, 50, that's pretty hefty. But we'll see how this moves forward. So there's lots of interest for secondhand ASIC miners.
So these guys are basically just turning over old stock, right? They presumably use the miners till they're no longer profitable and then sell them.
I would imagine they are doing it, but maybe other people are also taking advantage of this too. You know, it seems to be a one-stop shop rather than Kijiji. You can just dump it on there and maybe sell your large lot of ASIC miners. I don't know. I'm not sure who's going to be feeding the supply to them, but I know if you're looking for a large number, 50 plus, check out Foundry X.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we don't have that kind of, unless you want to start a warehouse next year, like the show doesn't really make that much money. So we can't really buy like industrial warehouse space, at least not yet. if we could stack and rack a little bit, do the show from the warehouse.
We don't even need a warehouse. You could go far up north, just tarp it. So just the ambient temperature up north is cool enough. It's going to keep the miners cool. Make sure that just, you know, precipitation doesn't get it wet and short circuit everything. So we got to think outside the box, Joey. I think there's opportunities to do
think
so.
Outside the tarp.
And thinking of thinking outside the box, Australia drafts plans to regulate Bitcoin and digital assets. And this effectively is going to be legalizing Bitcoin in Australia. And it's Australia has an opportunity now to be one of the leading countries in the world to leverage this new technology. This is from the Federal Treasurer of Australia. Interesting stuff. It looks like that they're acknowledging Bitcoin, and maybe it looks like they're going to be legalizing it over there. Adopting it as a currency, probably not. But you know what? This is a step in the right direction.
I can't believe, like, again, don't want to go down the rabbit hole, but this is in stark contrast to some of the other Australian policies that are in the mainstream news these days. How is that possible? They're doing this on one side and then, you know, the other thing on the other side of the coin here. It's interesting stuff. I mean, the demand for this must be so high to have this available to you, right? If in a country like Australia, for them to be going down this road. But Canada hasn't even really done this yet.
No, Australia is the first one of the big boys that seems to be going down this path. I don't think any other country, the larger nations, larger economic nations have done this. So once you have one, you're going to have others. So I'm hoping that this goes smoothly. There's no hiccups and there's not a lot of resistance, because if there is, it's just going to derail it and delay the whole process some time. If this goes nice and smooth, we'll probably have another country that's going to do the same thing as Australia, especially if it's done without a hiccup and people love it. Why wouldn't another country do the same thing?
You know?
Success, it just breeds more success. And talking about success, let's talk about MicroStrategy. And they've done what they typically do. They purchased another 1,434 Bitcoin. That's a total value of $82.4 million in cash. What more could we have to say about this? MicroStrategy, they just keep buying Bitcoin. You know what? That's a lot of Bitcoin they have on their balance sheet. And that's locked up, probably not going to see the light of day for a very long time, making Bitcoin even more scarce.
Len, you know, I was a little disappointed today to not see Mike and Marathon and the usual suspects buying on the 46, you know, 45, 46 handle. Maybe they'll announce in the coming days. But, you know, Sailor is under a little bit of heat from some really radicalized maxis, we'll say, about him not holding his own keys. Have you seen this? He doesn't custody any of the Bitcoin. He has someone else custody it for him.
So that's interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's required because of his sort of, you know,
he could be handcuffed.
Right. The company may have certain restrictions as to what it can and can't hold. And so I'm not sure, but interesting stuff, man. Interesting stuff.
That comment, if you want to read it.
Yeah. Levi in the chat, there's only 10% of Bitcoin left to be mined. That's true, but I don't think it's done in 8 years. I think it's done quite a way down the road. I think it was 2142 or something like that.
Yeah, last year, I think.
So they're going to, those S9s, Liam or Levi, they're, those are going to be in the trash, long discarded before the last Bitcoin is mined. You and I will also be in the trash, long discarded before that. So don't worry.
S9000s at that point. Yeah,
don't worry about it. They got lots of time.
And not just talking about MicroStrategy stacking Bitcoin, let's talk about Funware. We talked about them in the past. They're the mobile software company. They bought another 100 Bitcoin, and that brings up their total reserves to 630 Bitcoin. You know what? This company after company is now buying Bitcoin, at least it's being reported, they're buying Bitcoin. It's all good news. There's less and less Bitcoin out there. I'm telling you, it's making it even more scarce. I know this is only 100, but 100, I can't buy 100. Funware did. So clearly they know something, and I know the same thing. I just can't act on it. But good for them. And they're now a lot more rich in Bitcoin, 630.
That's nice, man. I was saying to someone today, it might have actually been Massa, actually, now I'm thinking about it, but we were talking about how there's been a significant slowdown in sort of the momentum and the, not only the momentum, but the expectation of new buys from some of the big cap companies, the mega caps, like the Apples, Microsofts, whatever, right? I don't remember really, because it's kind of a blur, but before Tesla bought, what the sentiment was like around Bitcoin. I think we had cooled off from 40 to 30 or something like that, maybe during that time that Tesla was buying. And so I wonder how many companies who were thinking about it before are now looking at the price drop from 69, nice, to whatever we're at now, 47 or 48. And maybe you're going to start to revisit this potential buy for their treasury. I'm not sure, but I do see that companies who are a lot smaller, who would presumably be buying a lot less, Funware, who I've never heard of before, maybe in some relation to Fun Dip.
We talked about them once in the past. It was a few weeks back.
Oh, okay. So they're not completely new to us. But I mean, obviously, they didn't leave much of an impression, which may be my fault. I'm not sure.
We have so many companies that we're talking about.
I know. It's all in the ether, right? No pun intended there. So, I mean, you see these smaller companies, these more agile companies do this stuff. And I just wonder if there's other companies that are thinking about it. So I'm waiting to see what the next quarter of earnings looks like. But I don't know. Like, are you sort of disillusioned now with this mega cap? The potential for mega caps to be buying, like how many more do you think we're going to get in the next year or so? And I guess I don't have to ask you this. I don't really care whether they buy or not, but do you care? I doubt you care either.
No, in a way I kind of like when they do it because it kind of shines a good light on Bitcoin, and it makes it seem like it's a good store of value, because if companies with a lot of capital are purchasing Bitcoin, clearly they have some intelligence and knowledge and what to do with the money, and it's probably going to encourage more retail investors to do the same. Just don't mean to change topics briefly. I'm sorry, don't mean to change topics too much, but Liam put a nice comment there. If you want to just bring that up to the chat, he was saying he was chatting with the CFO for the BC Teachers Union, and he was talking to them all about Bitcoin, and he orange pilled him hard. That's awesome. If you're going to bring the BC Teachers Union on board, at least an official on there, the CFO, and make him a Bitcoiner, that's awesome stuff, because you know what? They're not going to be able to sustain the pension with traditional 60-40 split. If they could bring some Bitcoin in there, it's going to help them at least maintain, if not grow, their pension plan. So good on you, Liam. Good on you. And I'm not sure if
let's get this guy on the show. Can we get him on the show? Where's he at? Liam, me and you already have a DM open. Send me the guy's name and his email. I'll try and get him on.
Yeah.
That's a low risk ad for us to the guest list. I would love to talk to that guy, but what's up?
But is he a D-lister according to that Montreal Dave guy?
Unbelievable, Montreal Dave. God, that's just so, you know, terrible.
I keep bringing him up over and over again. Next up, I want to talk about WhatsApp very briefly. They're testing out stablecoin payments over the app in the United States. Nothing right now about testing Bitcoin payments, but it looks like they're testing out stablecoin payments. So maybe in a not too distant future, we will have Bitcoin being exchanged through WhatsApp, which would be really freaking cool if that happens.
So they're using the Paxos stablecoin, right? USDP, I think it's called.
I don't know. This is interesting.
Yeah, they are. They're using USDP. And, you know, I think the real Trojan horse here is not they're going to use USDP first and then see the light and move to Bitcoin. I don't think they're going to do that. I doubt Facebook is going to do that. You know, we've kind of hypothesized about whether Apple will come up with their own sidechain, you know, a la Blockstream or something like that, if they ever go that route. I think the more likely outcome is people will use USDP on WhatsApp. And if it works, what they'll say is, well, I'm only really one step from having Bitcoin as an asset on my personal balance sheet. And so I'm watching the price go up in Bitcoin. People are obviously using this stuff. It's not as hard as I was sort of led to believe a year ago or 2 years ago. So why don't I buy it too? I think that's really the jump that we're hoping people make. I've said this many times, and I say it as a criticism to the ETH heads more than anything, but these companies are not using Ethereum. And someone pointed out to me that Paxos is actually done on the Ethereum blockchain. It's like on the stablecoin is done on ETH. It's like ERC-20, I guess. This is a moot point. At some point, there's going to be a regulatory framework around these stable coins, and it's not going to be beneficial for Ethereum. So I don't want to hear that. It doesn't matter to me. I would just suggest that the real thing to look at, the progress to look for, is in the minds of the people who are using the stablecoin on WhatsApp, how much closer can they get to rationalizing holding Bitcoin? I hope it's significant.
Yeah, I agree. We'll see how this plays out. And you know what? I suspect 2022 will know a lot more about these big companies jumping on board.
For sure.
Moving on, let's talk about DeSantis, the Florida governor, and he vows the state will remain friendly to Bitcoin. And he's proposed a program to enable businesses in Florida to pay state fees in Bitcoin. And this is among other cryptocurrency related proposals that are being included in the state's budget for next year. DeSantis is a rising star amongst his party. He seems to be very well received amongst his state and maybe people outside his state. But in this case here, he's doing what he can to be pleasing the Bitcoiners of the world. And I like this story. I don't hear anything about Miami Coin or any shitcoin. I hear them that you're able to pay state fees in Bitcoin. Fantastic. I love it.
I like DeSantis a lot, man. Without getting into politics and the politics of the virus, I would just say that there's a number of people, I think, on both sides of the aisle who are looking for rational and reasonable, sensible politics and sensible policies. And it seems to me this guy is maybe the guy that both sides are looking for at the moment. So this doesn't surprise me at all. We've cautioned on this show before, that said, that some of these politicians are trying to put wind in their sails without any real understanding or intention around supporting the network. So let's see what he does in the next 6 months or year. But I'm happy to have him at least uttering the B word on a public stage. That's important to me. And it's not the C word that we've come to hate so much on this program. So good for him. And yeah, let's see, man. Florida looking better and better by the day, Len. As we know, very nice there today. Me and you are over here shivering, you know, in our cold Canadian weather. And in Florida, those guys are walking the dog in shorts. Would be nice.
Actually, today wasn't too bad over here. Luckily,
speak for yourself. I'd rather be in shorts, man.
Oh, actually, I wasn't. I would always wear shorts, to be perfectly honest. I'm very rarely do I throw pants on. But anyway, that's a story for another time. This is actually the next thing I want to talk about is actually troubling, Joey. I'm not sure if you've been following this, but a number of Bitcoin developers have been leaving. They've been essentially quitting. And there seems to be the reason why. Somebody's been doing some digging. Our friend Craig Stephen Wright might be the cause of this. And it looks like he's pulling in a lot of those developers into court. He's trying to bring them all down. And I don't know exactly what's the rationale for this, but there's a lawsuit that's been filed between him and a lot of these developers. This is very interesting. The fact that we're losing a lot of developers, that they are officially leaving. People are suspecting they may come back in an anonymous form. So they will no longer be able to be tracked or even sued. But the fact that we are losing developers seems to be a little, I don't know. It's kind of troubling, and I'm not sure what to make of this. And, you know, losing good people is always difficult, because replacing them is, you know, obviously is a challenge. Bitcoin is something that's constantly developing. It constantly needs maintenance, constantly needs work. You need people behind it. And yeah, I don't know what else to say. This is something that we need to look at into a little bit more once we learn a little bit more about it. This needs to be, you know, further developed in front of our eyes. But still, as of right now, something a little concerning to me, Joey.
Is it alarming yet what this guy is doing? I don't know if it is or not. I've seen this story a few times, and some of the names on that list are people who have not, to my knowledge, done anything except the work on the Bitcoin GitHub. You know, people like Peter Todd. What has that guy done? Luke Dash Jr., some of these other guys. I don't know if Dash had made it into the crosshairs yet, but the names of people on that list, like, I have not heard them say a disparaging word about CSW. I have not heard that they're, you know, trying to yank the rug on something that he's working on, or yank the rug on BSV or whatever. Like, I haven't heard any of that stuff. And I, you know, there's also like this thing he's got going on with McCormick, where McCormick is shelling out like significant eight-figure sums on the regular to cover his legal fees, while CSW kind of continues to steamroll forward with God only knows, like, you know, what intention in mind. And so once in a while, there'll be like a leaked screenshot of the, I guess, what's the BSV Telegram chat, maybe. It's like a private Telegram chat. Mm-hmm. And CSW is talking about bringing down every single person who worked on that network.
Yeah, I just have think, that like, screenshot here.
Yeah, so like, what is the end game here? You can't bring down Bitcoin. You bring down the developers. I mean, what do you get out of that? If Bitcoin fails, like, BSV fails too. It all fails if Bitcoin fails. Like, that's the one that really matters, right? That's the one that all the other wagons are tied to. That's the horse that's important here. And if that thing fails, you know, you're not going to be better off financially. You may get what you think is a moral victory, but I just don't see a world where the financial side makes sense for him. But I got to be honest, Len, you know, I don't know that much about the lawsuits, but it doesn't seem like a lot of it makes sense to me at all. I can't put rhyme or reason on it, even if I try and play devil's advocate. Can you?
No, but he's a master of litigation, and he's looking like he could file litigation at a drop of a hat. So it doesn't mean that him doing so means sense, or there's any rational thought behind it in order to do it. In his eyes, maybe there is. Again, because we don't really know everything, he might have a little bit more information, and he could decipher it that he would have a case against him. It's not to say that he will have a case that will be positive. It's just in his eyes, or at least the people around him, believes that he should be able to file litigation and maybe try to drag down the Bitcoin development community. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's anything's going to come out of this. But at least for the time being, you have a lot of developers that are kind of jumping ship. And
it's already kind of coming out of it then, right? Like that's a result that we don't need in the space for sure. And certainly not one we need if you're a Bitcoin advocate and an open source software advocate. You want people to feel free working on these projects, doing what's best for the project, but it's obvious they don't feel like that. And that's not only going to scare away old developers, it's going to scare away new ones. And we don't want that.
Nothing to stop them from going underground, so to speak, and perhaps using like Tor to hide your identity, come back in such a way that you won't be able to pinpoint who it is that is going to be the developers of Bitcoin. So any litigation, yeah, will just, you know, you cannot, it will never stick. So I don't know. It's all speculative on my part. And we'll see how this plays out in not too distant future. Couple of more stories, Joey. First up, I'll be talking about the U.S. lawmaker Marie Newman. She's a congresswoman from the United States, and she bought up to $50,000 of Grayscale Bitcoin Trust shares. You know, every time I get a story like this, it brings a smile to my face, because you have people in charge, people that are, they understand what's going on with the economy, they understand what's going on with the laws, they understand where the country is going towards. And if they are buying up, getting exposure into Bitcoin, in this case, Grayscale Bitcoin Trust shares, why isn't everybody else doing it? This is like a telltale sign of what's to come. And when you see stories like this, we should all be just jumping on and buying more Bitcoin if you have the means to do so. So great story, Joey.
What is the Pelosi portfolio tracker saying on GBTC? I know it got banned from Twitter.
It's like, yeah, it did.
We didn't bring that up. Yeah, so I won't talk about it anymore. But you're right. The people who know the most, closest to the information spigot, and have the most connections as far as what's coming down the pipe for regulatory frameworks, they're buying. And whether you think it has to be GBTC, or it can be something like, I don't know, NVIDIA or Coinbase or whatever, I think that it's all pointing one way for Bitcoin. I don't know about the other tokens.
NVIDIA is the GPU miner.
Yeah. But whatever you like, it's just exposure to the space, right? So I think that there's a reasonable expectation that Ethereum may be viewed as a security at some point. But yeah, Let's say, Len, we're wrong about that. And what we're never not, wrong. I know so far we're batting 100% across 55 or 58 episodes, whatever we've done. So let's say we're wrong about the securities thing, but we're not wrong about the proof of stake thing. That's another presumably item that those lawmakers could get information on. And so I always think, like, what do they know that I don't know, or what do they know that leads them into some of the decisions they make? I don't know. I do like stories like this, though. It's important to track what the people who are closest to the information hub are doing with their money. And you know, I don't know if the report sells. I don't think they do, right? Maybe some members of Congress do, but not all of them. I'm not sure. But
this, I don't know.
I haven't seen a lot of Bitcoin selling and related equities selling recently, so I'm not that worried.
Just buying and buying. And last story I have, Joey, I want to talk about Mayor Scott Conger from the city of Jackson. We talked about the mayor quite a few times through our many episodes, and he is now going to allow employees to be eligible to get Bitcoin paid in their 401k. I don't know how this is going to be done. This is interesting, though. If they're going to allow people to get paid in Bitcoin through their 401k, that's incredible stuff.
How can that be the case? How does that?
I have no idea. I'm going to watch how this transpires, how it plays out in front of us, because I can't wrap my head around this. But up until today, you know, I mean, really all along, this guy's been a pro Bitcoiner. He's been advocating for Bitcoin. He's been a strong presence for the Bitcoin community, at least, you know, in his small city. I don't know how he's going to be able to achieve this. So I'm looking forward to see how this is ultimately rolled out. But the fact that it's being reported like this, very interesting stuff, Joey.
You and me both, man. He was the coiner of the week a few times for us, or just maybe once when that first story dropped about him, in the summertime, maybe.
Maybe I got to go back. I can't remember if he was a Bitcoiner of the week. I can't remember. He should be, though. You know.
Yeah.
You know what? In fact, I'm done with the stories, and you know what? I'm gonna go ahead with my Bitcoiner of the week, and it's gonna be Mayor Scott Conger. And the reason why he's my Bitcoiner of the week, he's gonna make employees for the city of Jackson eligible to get their Bitcoin, the 401k paid paid in Bitcoin. So he's my Bitcoiner of the week. I love it. So that's just
strong.
Came off of the cuff, and there you go. So I don't have another Bitcoiner of the week, but that's it. You have a Bitcoiner?
I don't. I have neither this week. I'll just say that instead of the usual Bitcoiner, no coiner for me. Again, another word of caution for what you're going to start seeing here with the language games that the press plays. We saw that story last week about the Biden administration meeting with corporate legacy press to discuss the way that their economic policies and outcomes are being framed. And we talked earlier about the definition of work and the definition of living in these sort of tables and charts and whatnot. Be careful, man, because today they're changing the term just a little bit. And, you know, next year they do it just a little bit again. Before you know it, you know, you find yourself employed. And really what you're doing is just driving salsa and chips to people in your, you know, leased coop. So just be aware. Don't let them reframe the discussion. Make sure you know what you want and what you deserve, man. Like, there's no way to live. So keep that in mind.
It's a noble vocation, Toga. To ferry salsa and dip the people.
So I don't even ferry it from my kitchen to the couch. I can't imagine like getting in my car to wheel it around town. That'd be just like,
gotta do what you gotta weak. Do, Joey.
I guess, but like the anyway, whatever.
It's, yeah, I know.
No problem.
And Unfortunately, this week I don't have a no coiner of the week. Montreal Dave probably could have been my no coiner, but I don't really want to harp too much. And he's probably the eternal no coiner of the week going forward now. So I don't have one. So yeah, I'm sorry if you're looking for it. Maybe next week I'll have one ready for you.
That's it. We'll we're gonna cut the audio off here. I'll just say one thing: we're working on a Christmas episode for, I guess, what is it, next week? We got to do it, right? I think
I'm hoping that we'll get it. Yeah, for next week. Okay. There's still some, you know, discussions logistically, if it's, you know, possible to achieve. But we'll see. We'll try to do something special one way or other for next week. So just, yeah, keep your eyes and ears open. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be good no matter what. It'll be different than the usual stories rundown, at least for sure, because we're both going to be busy and we'd like to do something a little different for that episode. So the price of Bitcoin to wrap in U.S. dollars, we got a little bit of a green move here, thank God. Oh, never mind, it's back down. $46,701 U.S. Shit.
And you know, in Canadian, holy cow, we're so close to 60,000. I got $59,985 in Canadian. So close to 60,000 Canadian, but unfortunately we didn't cross the threshold.
Are you setting any limit orders? What do you think? Are you going to add to your stack at like a certain level? I haven't changed anything. I'm still doing $30 a day. That's what I'm buying these days.
That's what I do. I set a daily limit and it happens in the morning, whatever the price is. I snap up the Bitcoin. You know, I should be doing some limit orders, but you know, I'm just happy just doing it at a certain time of the day and going from there. Yeah, I mean, what else could you really do? Just keep buying daily, DCA doing it while the prices are low, and when it's high, who the hell cares? Keep buying. What else could you really do? You know, this thing's gonna rip to six and then seven figures eventually.
Hey, where'd your camera go? You just went off. It's like just a picture of your avatar now. Anyway,
we're gonna stay
on video to shoot the shit with the chat. But if you're on audio, hop over to YouTube and we'll see you there. And if we don't, then we'll see you on Friday for more good times.
I'm back.
You're back.
Yeah, different camera. What happened?
I don't know. Take care, buddy.
Take care.